Chapter 7. Digging In. Narthani Headquarters, Predi City. General Okan Akuyan held a cup as he stared at the map on the wall, the bitter taste of kava matching his mood. Instead of the Cadelia map showing Narthani expansion from Predi, the province they controlled, and the two neighboring and allied provinces, Aiwal and Selfsil, a line meandered parallel to the eastern border of Aiwal and separated almost a fifth of the province no longer inhabited by the Aiwal clan. Incursions and raids by the other clans had been frequent and severe enough for the Aiwalese to abandon farms, ranches, and villages, even to within 10 miles of the clan capital at Hounslow. He could hear the rustling of papers, the shifting of chairs, and low murmurs of men behind him, waiting for him to start the meeting. His mind went back to another map, one that had hung on this wall before being taken down and stored, a map with arrows indicating their invasion route into Moreland province, then onto Oros province, and eventually to the sea, splitting the island in half. They had been confident that most of the other clans would capitulate to Narthani control, to avoid the fate of the Predi clan during the early phases of the Narthani mission to subjugate Cadelium and bring it into the Narthan Empire. For the months since Moreland City and more times than he had counted, Akuyan had gone over written plans, meeting summaries, and reports, trying to find where he had erred. He was in command. Therefore, the failure of the Moreland invasion fell to him. Yet no matter how hard he tried, he couldn't find fault with himself or any of his subordinates. He was honest enough with himself to recognize that not finding fault didn't mean fault was lacking, only that he couldn't see it. In the end, he came down to two possibilities. One was that indeed his shortcomings were at the root of their problem. The alternative was that they had done everything possible given what they knew, but some unknown new element had come into play. In the latter case, they had no way to factor an unknown into their plans, and thus they were caught unawares. Either way, they had to accept their situation, and he had a duty to deal with what lay before them. He took a deep breath and turned to face the room full of men. A senior staff meeting usually involved Akuyan, his three most senior subordinates, and the assessor. Those four men sat at the table before him. Brigadier Ivak Zulfa, commander of all Narthani ground forces. Admiral Morfred Kalkin, naval commander. Nizam Tuzir, civilian population administrator. And Sadek Hizer, the mission assessor, assigned to give the High Command independent evaluations of mission progress and evaluations of senior leaders. An infrequent participant in staff meetings was Mamduk Balkan, the senior prelate, with the role of overseeing conversion of the island's people to worship the only true god, Narth. While Akuyan preferred not to have the man in meetings, today was different. The focus of the mission would formally change as of today, and would remain changed until new instructions came from Narthon. Akuyan had already briefed Balkan, and the prelate had reacted irrationally, just as predicted. The fact that the military situation made it temporarily impossible to expand conversion efforts made no impression on him. It had taken Akuyan over an hour to placate the prelate enough so that he would keep silent in today's meeting. Fortunately, Balkan had changed his tone, because Akuyan had come close to deciding an unfortunate accident needed to befall the prelate. Those five faces were turned to him, as were 30 others, of men sitting in chairs to the back and sides of the table. Colonels, senior majors, commodores, a dozen select civilian administrators, and two of Hizer's assistants. The expanded staff meeting signaled to all attendees that the mission was about to undergo a major reorientation. Akuyan didn't take his seat. He would stand for the meeting, as was appropriate for what he had to say.
Gentlemen, let us begin.
Those had not already turned to Akuyan did so, backs straightened in chairs, pupils dilated in their focus to the head of the room, and for a moment the only sound was breathing. I need not explain that phase 4 of the subjugation of the island of Cadellium did not go as planned. It was an understatement. No one laughed. We predicated our move on Moreland Province based on the assumption the clans would not unite in numbers enough to be a threat, and on their inexperience in field tactics. We expected to inflict one or more decisive defeats on the battlefield, followed by individual clans accepting Nathani's suzerainty. However, the enemy our men fought outside of Moreland City was not the foe we anticipated. Although we faced 10 clans, more than expected, it should not have affected the outcome. The critical factor was that the clan showed a tactical sense far beyond what we believed they had any right to have, and they possessed light artillery, something else unexpected. Granted, the Eyewall desertion of their flank screening position precipitated what followed. What we didn't expect from the Cadelli was their willingness to sacrifice so many men to focus our attention on a charge straight into our guns, luring away and destroying the Aiwuli's contingent, and the rapid follow-up of the opening provided by our exposed flank. Our men were not defeated, though were badly hurt. Brigadier Zalfa withdrew in good order back to our base territory. The clans also suffered significant casualties, and no further major engagements occurred, although our force was harassed on their way back. At the same time, the clans overran the launch base at Pathmul. After that, the clans made no further major moves against us. However, while Moreland City was a tactical draw, there is no purpose in pretending it was anything other than a strategic defeat. A subtle shift in bodies, subvocal vibrations, and a sense of gloom pervaded the room. Knowing about the battle was not the same as hearing the respected mission commander's blunt assessment. Naturally, we will continue to analyze what happened, but our main concern is, what next? Not all of you are aware, but the High Command knew, from the beginning, that the resources committed to this mission were not sufficient to ensure success. I will tell you now that when I was assigned as commander, the High Command confided that the odds of complete success were no better than 50-50. Privately, I had indications the likelihood was even lower. The High Command assessed that the relatively minimal resources committed were a reasonable gamble. None of that changes the fact that we've failed in our primary mission. After lengthy discussions with all senior commanders and after careful consideration of possible future courses of action, I have decided that for the time being, our focus will no longer be on efforts to subdue the other clans. We will secure and maintain our current positions while we await directions from Narthon. In plain language, we are shifting from an offensive posture to a defensive one. Before we continue, are there questions or relevant comments? One of the civil administrators rose from his seat. General Akuyan, I think we all suspected this was coming. I know you have considered all options, though it is still a shock to hear. So is there really no way to continue as originally planned, even with this one setback?
No, said Akuyan firmly. We lost 8% of our men at Moreland City, with another 200 wounded seriously enough to be unfit for duty for months, some permanently. In addition, we lost 20 artillery pieces captured by the Cadelli. We can cast more here in Predi City, but now the islanders have field pieces and can use our own guns against us. Although the 10 clans we faced in the battle equaled our numbers, they didn't commit all their men. Now that those clans that didn't come to Moreland's aid have seen the results, it would be foolish to ignore the fact that additional clans will likely join future resistance. In another field engagement, we could see ourselves outnumbered 2 or 3 to 1 by a more mobile adversary who knows the terrain better than we do and who now has artillery. Administrator Tuzir raised a hand to get Akuyan's attention. The general nodded and Tuzir rose. The other factor that complicates General Akuyan's planning is the 100,000 non-military persons we have in Preti Province. His duty is also to protect all of those from any threats.
Good Noth! Exclaimed the shocked administrator. You don't think the Kadeli could actually attack us here?
It's a possibility I'm obliged to consider, interjected Akuyan. I hope you understand our position. It's apparent we can't risk field engagements with the Kadeli, nor can we expose the Nopani settlers to raids. The only option I see is to maintain a defensive stance until word comes from Narthon.
When and what is that likely to be?
Asked another administrator. I sent an unloaded sloop to our closest port at Izarkin on the northern border with the Iroquois Confederation. Assuming good winds, the sloop should reach port in another 2 to 4 6 days. Then the reports go overland 1,000 miles to the end of the semaphore line being built at Izarkin and on to Osmaya, the capital. The High Command will take whatever time they deem necessary to consider options and then send the answer back to us. At the soonest, I'll be surprised if we get the response in less than 5 months from now.
What is your assessment of what that response will be?
Asked Colonel Nuthrat Metin. Akuyan's face showed no emotion. Though most of the men knew one possible response would be his removal from command. Arrest after defeat was not unknown in Nathani history. I and Assessor Hizer agree the High Command can decide one of three possible future courses of action. One is to abandon the mission to conquer Kadelium and withdraw all personnel back to Narthon. The obvious complication is that we have been bringing people to Kadelium for 5 years. Even by using every available ship, it would take a year to do the evacuation. And during the later phases, we could come under Kadeli attack as our numbers diminished. It will also require abandoning the original reason for the mission. The second possible decision would be to tell us to hold our position as part of the effort to establish a supply and launching base for moves under Landolin and the Iroquois Confederation. In that case, there would likely be an increase in forces, but we would no longer have the objective of taking the entire island. And finally, the decision could be that taking the entire island remains the objective, and reinforcements will be sent, probably a force many times larger than we have here now. Several arms raised for attention, and Akuyan anticipated the next question.
I'm afraid there's no one clear most likely possibility. Each has factors in favor and against. If I were forced to predict, I would choose the third, only because of my perception of the High Command's level of interest, not because I have any specific information. When several more hands waved for recognition, Akuyan shook his head. Any more questions about what has happened or might come from Narthon should wait until later. Right now, we need to move on to what is most important. What we are to do until we hear from Narthon. Moving to a defensive stance will require significant changes for all parts of our enterprise here in Kadelium, both military and non-military. The actions that I've determined are necessary fall into three categories. Actions within Preti Province, those concerning the Selfsil and Iwal clans, and actions against the other clans. We'll go over them individually. Akuyan motioned to Administrator Tuzir, who stood as Akuyan then took his seat. Tuzir's visage appeared grim.
For the non-military Narthani living in Preti province, this necessitates effectively putting all of them under the demands of the military. That is, what is needed for the defense of Preti province is the top priority. The following steps are necessary. From this point on, expansion into new farm and ranch land will cease. Any such ongoing activities will also stop, and people involved will pull back to work on existing, fully functioning properties. Export of foods, mainly grains and cured meats, back to Narthan will stop. All food production will go to provide for our people, the two allied clans, as necessary, and to build up stockpiles.
Stockpiles!
Blurted the administrator for the southern portion of Preti, a region of cattle raising. That implies you fear food production might be cut off.
The only way that could happen is if the Kadeli attack right into Preti and we can't depend on producing more food.
Akuyan answered before Tuzir could. Under current circumstances, we must account for all possibilities. Before, we didn't believe the islanders were a direct threat to our settlements. Now we have to recognize that's possible, though we can't judge how likely as yet. The shaken questioner fell silent, and Tuzir continued.
We must also prepare our non-military Narthani to contribute to direct defense. It is as General Akuyan has said, duty requires us to account for all possibilities, one of which is direct threats against our population. This will involve preparing local defensive positions where the populace of the surrounding area can go to wait for army relief. It will require forming militias of able-bodied men. I will coordinate with Colonel Ketton on the defensive positions and Brigadier Zulfa on the militia. We, and by this I mean mainly the local civilian administrators in this room and your staffs, will need to evaluate the numbers and distribution of slaves and servants from client peoples, including the remaining original Preti, for potential sabotage. Any troubling individuals will need to be moved farther from the borders and into situations where they can be observed more closely. And finally, we know we have to maintain a functioning level of the economy. But consistent with that, men, slaves or not, can be called on for whatever labor or duty is necessary. I hardly need say that as soon as word of these changes spreads, there will be turmoil among our civilians. Most of them never imagined the situation, any more than we in this room did. At least we've had time to anticipate most of what is necessary, whereas the civilians will be hit with it all at once. I'm afraid there's no way around this. My administrators and I will work to make ourselves available down to the smallest local level to reassure people and also to confirm the necessity of these actions and tamp down complaints. The first 6 day will be the worst. After that, people will adjust to the new conditions. If necessary, stern measures will be taken against agitators, whether they deliberately resist what is ordered or are incapable of adjusting because of individual issues.
Colonel Erdelin stood.
Administrator, or General Akuyan, has it been decided how internal authority will be applied? By the existing internal security officers or the military?
It will depend on the location and circumstances, all to be worked out,
Tuzir answered.
Where necessary, existing security personnel will be supplemented with troops. For example, to the usual two-man foot patrol within Preti City, we might add two troopers. Similar with mounted patrols, except toward the borders where the army may take over control. For now, local authority and judicial channels will remain the same, subject to conditions requiring full military control.
Tazir nodded to Akuyan and sat down. At a motion from Akuyan, Colonel Ketton stood.
I've been tasked by General Akuyan to oversee preparing Predi City to withstand a concerted attack.
We don't think it likely, given the islanders' lack of experience in such matters, and that they would have to fight their way here. But as the General says, it is our responsibility to plan for any eventuality. We won't attempt to build complete fortifications, but we'll lay out basic positions and do the most time-consuming work. Then, if necessary, the remainder of the positions can be completed in a reasonably short time by a concerted effort of all available workers. For example, should the worst happen, and we have to defend Predi City, the Navy will only be able to provide support near shore. However, naval 30-pounders can be moved to prepared positions onshore. Lesser defensive positions will be prepared in other selected locations, though those will be intended only as holding actions should we need all the people to consolidate at Predi City.
Ketton sat, and Akuyan rose again.
Colonel Ketton served for many years with distinction as an engineering officer before transferring to combat units, and I have absolute faith in the fortifications he is designing.
Or at least that's what I have to say to instill as much confidence as I can, thought Akuyan. As we will keep saying, we don't believe such measures are likely to be needed, but I've got a bad feeling we're playing in a game where we suddenly don't know all the rules.
We will also need to make changes in our military capabilities, as Brigadier Zalfa will outline.
Zalfa rose.
The main changes are that we need more cavalry, and retrain pikemen with muskets. We didn't anticipate that we'd have to ward off large-scale raids or even attacks by the islanders inside the territory we control. However, we have to be able to respond faster and with more men. Since we're not going to receive any more cavalry from Narthon for at least 5 months, we have to create them here. And we'll do it in two ways. We'll convert some of our existing infantry units into mounted cavalry. Some of the men already have experience riding, so we'll put those men out of their units and add more men who'll have to be trained in horsemanship, at least enough to ride to a fight. We don't expect them to be as good as the existing cavalry, so their mission will be to support the current units. Second, it was unfortunate the High Command decided not to bother sending any of the newer formations where all pikes would change to muskets. Mixed pike and musket formations were obsolete back home, but it was thought the islanders were so unorganized that no upgraded units were needed. Pikes are the traditional defense against cavalry charges, which we assumed would be the most likely offensive action we would face. Unfortunately, our expectation was wrong, and the islanders threw infantry at us after luring the Iwalese from their screening position. One problem is a shortage of muskets to rearm the pikemen and still have a supply of replacement muskets. Predi Province didn't have sufficient steel-making capability originally, but we had already expanded what existed, and the first blast furnace has been operating for 3 months, smelting iron ore into pig iron. The first finery forge and trip hammers are now operating, and we're beginning to turn out steel for making muskets. The startup process is slow. We estimate 3 to 4 months to turn out enough new muskets to replace those lost at Moreland City and be well on the way to rearming the pikemen. We've already started the retraining, using wooden mock-ups and a limited number of muskets. As the pikemen are rearmed, the training will intensify. We haven't made a final decision whether the new musket men will be incorporated into existing units with experienced men or formed into entirely new units. Exigencies will be the determining factor. Administrator Tazir mentioned forming militia from the civilian population. Some of these people already ride as well as our cavalrymen, particularly workers on the cattle and horse ranches. Others who have any experience with horses will be formed into local mounted units. None of these will be expected to fight battles alone, but will serve to patrol and support the cavalry units. As for other militia formations, we will work out the training with Administrator Tuzir and his staff. These units will be intended to defend against any raid until the army can arrive. They will also serve in fortifications, should the need arise.
What about the Iwalese and Selfsalese?
Asked a grizzled commodore.
What happens to them?
They are one reason we doubt the islanders will form a direct threat to our people in Preti province. Admiral Kalkin and his ships control all waters around Cadellium, so any threat to Preti would have to come through either Selfsal or Iwal. We'll maintain our garrisons within these two provinces and will replace the pure infantry with mounted infantry as soon as possible. Both of those clans will mount vigorous patrols along their borders. Although I will confirm that the effective border of Iwal is well within the original border. They lost so many men when they broke position, they've been forced to pull back farther into their province. There's a 20-mile zone that's not controlled by Iwal or the other clans. Both sides run patrols, and there are occasional skirmishes, though nothing major. We are holding to the policy not to allow an influx of Iwalese into Preti province. We don't want to give the impression that Iwal is in imminent danger. Nor do we want the Iwalese spreading too many details about what happened at Moreland City to incite unnecessary panic among our own people. We are also considering operations to discourage islander moves toward our three provinces.
General Akuyan will summarize those.
Thank you, Brigadier, said Akuyan. Yes, we need to prevent the islanders from massing enough forces to threaten our positions. Plans are still being formulated, but the basic concept is to present a significant enough threat to the coastal clans that they are unable to send too many fighting men out of their provinces.
Excuse the interruption, said another of the civilian administrators. And no disrespect intended, but isn't that the strategy that failed to discourage the clans from uniting? I believe it was expected that only 5 or 6 clans would come to Moreland's aid. However, 9 came. What's the reason to believe it will work this time?
Akuyan could see several officers redden and clench their teeth. He wasn't offended. It was a reasonable question. And the purpose of the meeting was for the leadership to listen, ask questions, and hopefully leave, understanding the situation and committed to filling their new roles.
There is no such assurance, admitted Akuyan. It's been argued that those earlier raids were not extensive enough to tie down the clans, and that larger raids, or even overt attempts to take over a province by direct assault from sea with a major force, might be necessary. The argument against that approach is that it might encourage the other clans to finish uniting and try to attack us here with all their forces. It may be a delicate balance my staff and I have not yet come to understand satisfactorily. At the moment, it's merely an option to be considered.
Akuyan Villa, Preti City.
After evening meal, Rabia sent the two children, son Morzak and daughter Lufta, to their rooms to finish their studies before an hour of family time. Rabia also dismissed their serving girl, so she could speak openly with her husband.
How did the civilian administrators receive the change in focus, Okan? I assume they must have known some of this was coming, and Tuzer had prepared them, said Rabia.
Well enough, he replied. While you're right that they must have suspected some of it, the scope shocked a few of them. I tried to reassure them that many of the measures were only to provide for unlikely eventualities. I think most of them believed me.
Do you believe you?
Probed Rabia. She knew her husband.
I want to. By great Nath, I want to.
Still, some instinct is jabbing me in the spine that we've accidentally stirred a greater Morthan's nest. The Nathani admire the beautiful Onyarian insect-like flying creature for its iridescent mating swarms and feared its mass stingings whenever anyone disturbed a normally docile nest.
Do you really think the clans would unite enough to attack us here? It seems so impossible, given everything I've heard you say since we came to Cadellium.
Logically, the answer is no. However, logically, they should not have turned Zalfa back at Moorland City. That result can only have emboldened them. Enough to unite and come after us directly? I doubt it. Unless another factor comes into play.
Like what?
I suspect many of the clans are content to think we're confined to these three provinces. And as long as we stay here, they'll be willing to let us be. Especially the clans farthest away. But what if the High Command sends 20,000 or 30,000 reinforcements? Any delusion the islanders had about our intentions would disappear, and they might feel they had no choice but to launch an all-out attack. In that case, we would see 30,000 to 40,000 of our troops engaged against 50,000 islanders fighting to the death. What might happen? We would likely prevail, but who knows? Rabia reached across the table and laid a hand over her husband's, neither of them saying anything for several minutes before she spoke again.
I met with several officers' wives today. We had midday meal and several bottles of wine. They probed whether I had any insight into what was happening and if they should be worried. I tried to be encouraging, but was I right? Could we be in serious danger?
My professional side says no. Another part of me is not so sure. I've been thinking of something I'd like you to take on for me. It needs to be only between the two of us for now, since I hesitate to bring it up with Tuzir and Hizer. There are questions I'd like you to think about. What if we had to get as many children off Cadellium as fast as possible? If not in an emergency, what about gradually moving families back to Northon? What would such moves do to military and civilian morale? There's no timetable for this. Just consider it. And we can talk when you want. For the first time, Rabia fully understood how serious her husband considered the recent events.